When you buy something, it's an exchange. You expect to get something for your money. But what about when you give?
Hi, I'm Rob West.
Christians are called to be generous towards God's kingdom. There's no question about that. But should we expect something in return? I'll talk about that first today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, should we expect something in return for our generosity? The answer is a definite but qualified yes. 2 Corinthians 9:6 through 8 tells us, "Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work." Now, reaping bountifully does not mean that God must reward you monetarily for your generosity. You cannot make God a debtor. He already owns everything. But it does mean that God will bless you for your generosity. But that blessing can come in any form that God chooses. You have a problem with your heart attitude when you expect or demand material blessing from God for your generosity. This takes the form of sins like greed and covetousness, not to mention arrogance, but also a gaping lack of gratitude for what God has already given you. This is far more prevalent than you might think. Consider the so-called prosperity gospel with its doctrine of name it and claim it. Its teachers quote the Bible freely, but twist the meaning of certain verses to support their claims. An example of this would be James 4:2, which reads, "You do not have because you do not ask God." The prosperity gospel would have you believe that all you have to do is to ask God for something, anything, and He'll give it to you. But it ignores the very next verse that says, "You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions." 1 John 5:14 tells us the right way to bring our supplications to God. It says, "This is the confidence that we have before Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us." When your heart aligns with God's, you can never ask for anything He doesn't already want to give you. Matthew 19:29 is also twisted around to mean that God must reward your giving with greater financial reward. It reads, "And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive a hundredfold and will inherit eternal life." But the hundredfold increase that this verse promises is not material wealth, but fellowship with thousands of other believers here and in eternity. Yes, there is a return, and far greater than anything we could ever give, but it's not money. In fact, the Bible, and Jesus in particular, promise something quite different, that there is a cost for being His disciple. In John 15:20, Jesus warns, "Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you." Jesus promises tribulation, not prosperity. Make no mistake, by any name, the prosperity gospel is an aberration of Orthodox Christian theology. It claims that God will reward you with material wealth according to your faith. So as your faith increases, so will your wealth. Of course, Scripture promises no such thing. The prosperity gospel is a modern heresy. It crept into a few local congregations and tent revivals after World War II, but eventually found its way to radio and television, leading untold numbers astray by the 1980s and giving the word televangelism a negative connotation. And while it started in the U.S., it's now found around the world. Not surprisingly, it's spread faster in areas with great poverty, such as Africa, South America, and anywhere people struggle to make a living. As with any false doctrine, we must be vigilant to keep the prosperity gospel out of our churches. Theologian John Piper has identified several common traits to watch out for. Here are two. The absence of doctrine related to suffering. Remember Jesus' warnings about the cost of discipleship. The absence of detailed exposition of Scripture. In other words, cherry-picking verses without giving their context. To sum up, you should expect something in return for your generosity, God's blessing that enables you to do good works that glorify Him, not material wealth for your own pleasure. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Stick around.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. If we're honest with ourselves, it's sometimes hard to pray. Our days are long. We get tired. Some days are filled with sorrow, and we don't know what to say. The evil one can use these moments to kick us while we're down, to tempt us away from God, but we're not alone. We're protected, prayed for. In the middle of Romans 8, Paul talks about our sufferings and weakness. The Christians in Rome were discouraged, just as we are sometimes. Paul encouraged them in the gospel with these words. Verse 26, "The Spirit helps us in our weakness. We don't know what we ought to pray, for the Spirit Himself intercedes for us." Can't pray today? The Spirit is praying for you. Get daily encouragement with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. Here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
This is a unique moment in the history of our country where we have an opportunity to restore the foundations of this nation.
Tony Perkins of Washington Watch.
To a nation that once again honors God. It will not happen unless God's people are informed and engaged.
Join Tony Perkins for Washington Watch. Weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evening at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches. And we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
It's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. It's time to take your calls and questions today on anything financial. The number to call, 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. Here on Faith and Finance, we want to help you cultivate an eternal perspective of money. That's right. Our lives are fleeting. The Bible calls them a vapor. And yet the eternal, well, it lasts forever. And that's where we want to be, have our sights fixed on the things that are to come. And so we're storing up treasures in heaven, as we alluded to in our opening segment, talking about our heart attitude of giving. As we look to the scriptures, we see in Psalm 49, let me read what the psalmist observed. The psalmist writes, "Do not be afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not descend after him. Though while he lives, he congratulates himself. And though men praise you when you do well for yourself,
he shall go to the generation of his fathers. You know, we're reminded that we need to develop an eternal perspective of earthly things so that we're motivated to handle them in a way that pleases the Lord, not to build up our dependence of self. We know that is, that's foolish. We need to put our dependence squarely in the Lord and see money as a tool to accomplish his purposes. We want to help you do that on this program as we gather together each morning, and we'd love to hear from you as you wrestle through the practical decisions and choices you're making each day with God's money. So what's on your mind today? Let's talk about it. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We'd love to hear from you. Let's begin today in Maryland. Rosie, you'll be our first caller. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. My husband and I were told we no longer have to have our federal and state taxes withhold, because once you receive Social Security and your pension, you no longer have to pay taxes. I just wonder, was that true?
Well, it just depends upon the total amount of income that you have. The minimum income requirements for filing a return would be, if you're over age 65 as a single person, it would be $14,700. If you're both over 65 and you're married filing jointly, it'd be $28,700. So if you're under those income requirements, then technically you do not have to file a return. If you're over them, though, you certainly would.
Okay, we're over that amount, so I guess we need to file.
Yes, ma'am. I think that would be the safe bet. And you may not owe anything, but at least you've filed the return, and they can't come back to you and say, well, you did owe something, and now there's penalties and interest on top of it. So always a good idea to just go ahead and file if you're over that number. Is that helpful to you?
All right. Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
All right. You're very welcome, Rosie. Thanks for calling today. A few lines open, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West. This is Faith and Finance. Back to the phones to Texas. Hi, Jody. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. First, I just wanted to thank you so much for what you said about the prosperity gospel, because actually I've had just some friends of mine, trying to be in good faith, try to provide me that information, and I just, in my heart, I rejected it, but I've never had it put into words as to why, so I appreciated you explaining that.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy that was helpful.
Yeah, and then I had a question for you. So sure. My husband and I are 60, and we're approaching retirement age. I have a condition that makes me disabled, and so I'm not sure how long I'll be able to enjoy retirement before my options for doing things like traveling are gone.
Yes.
So, but that being said, we're not wealthy, and so right now we'll probably retire with maybe $200,000 in the bank, but we have managed to at least pay for everything, so we don't owe anything.
Great.
And so I guess and then the other thing that concerns me is that I do like to give, and I'm like to, try to follow God's calling where he leads me with, providing for whatever he asks me to provide for. So
yes.
Once we retire, I may not have that ability to do that anymore.
Sure.
So I'm trying to just kind of figure out, how do we know when we can go ahead and say enough is enough and, take the leap to retire?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that background, and I love that you have a heart for giving. I think that's one of the gifts God gives us, and clearly you get a lot of joy in that, and that's the way we were hardwired. We were created in the image of the ultimate giver, so I like to say we're most like him when we're giving. And as you think about this season of life, a lot of times the best starting place is just to say, what are our expenses going to be in retirement? Most folks will live on somewhere between 70 and 80% of their pre-retirement income just because they're no longer saving for retirement. The kids maybe are off the payroll. As you said, you're out of debt. So now you don't have a mortgage payment or maybe a car payment. You know, you're not driving as much because you're not commuting to work. I mean, there's a whole host of expenses that will change. Maybe you drop your life insurance because that's no longer needed in this season of life. So I think the key would be to start with that retirement budget to say, what is it actually going to take to fund our lifestyle in this season? And then let's compare that to the known income sources that we have, starting with Social Security, whenever the appropriate time is to begin taking Social Security, and then what income stream you might be able to generate from the retirement assets you've built up. So if we were to take that $200,000, you know, usually as a starting point, we would say, okay, a 4% withdrawal rate should be able to be maintained so that we never deplete that balance, at least over the long haul. Well, that's $8,000 a year. So I think as a starting point, it would be to say, okay, would around $600 to $700 a month from your $200,000 plus Social Security and whatever other income sources you have be enough to cover your expenses? I think that would at least be a beginning point. Talk to me about that piece of it.
Well, actually, I had my plan was is to go ahead and put us on our retirement budget in the next couple months.
Okay.
So that even though we're my husband's still working, we will be living off of what we would consider to be our retirement budget, just to see what our shortfall is every month if we have one.
Yes, ma'am.
And but you know, I guess the part that I feel pretty comfortable that we'll be able to live within our means, because my husband and I, you know, we've learned to live pretty simply, and we're happy with that.
Sure.
But the I guess the part that's harder is it's always the unknown expenses, right?
Yeah.
That do come up throughout the rest of your life, and I mean, there's just no way. How do you ever know that you'd ever have enough? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you just can't see that.
Right. And so answering that question, how much is enough, obviously is an important exercise, because we want to be able to continue to give generously. We want to be thoughtful about the accumulation that we're doing. But we, you know, as Ron Blue, one of my mentors, likes to say, do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going. And, you know, we don't want to reserve all of that until death. So if you have the opportunity to say, okay, we believe we have enough. I mean, ultimately, your trust is in the Lord, not in your things. And, you know, a lot of times we can get a false sense of security that, well, we've reached a number. What's your number? And I think ultimately we want to make sure that we're cultivating that dependence on Him. So I think as long as you've offset that biggest risk in this season of life, which is long-term care, that could run $8,000, $9,000 a month or more if you need nursing home care. Take care of that by adding a long-term care insurance policy. But beyond that, as long as you've got at least 6 months' expenses and savings and you've got your bills covered, I think you're pretty much there. Thanks for your call. We'll talk a bit more off the air, Jody, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Friendships is offering an exciting opportunity for young adults who want to grow in their walk with God, become physically fit, and learn relief ministry while serving in the Middle East. This is an amazing opportunity to serve God and experience Israel. Check out Seahawk's one-year scholarship program at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. That's 337-433-5022. The next session begins August 19th. We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program.
Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
I'd like to take a moment to ask you to consider investing in the ministry that you know as American Family Association. One way you can support AFA's efforts is through your estate planning. You can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
So thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance as we provide a hopeful, encouraging, biblical message of financial decision making. You know, it's all about looking through the lens of Scripture, holding what God has entrusted to us loosely so we can give generously. I would submit that's the primary purpose for which God has entrusted resources to us, clearly to provide for ourselves and our families. But I think so often we get stuck in an endless list of needs and wants, never getting beyond that to the opportunity to serve those on our path and be generous, supporting the work of the Lord. Think about that today as you consider your role as a steward in managing God's money. We've got two lines open today, 800-525-7000, with your questions and comments, maybe even a testimony of God's faithfulness in your life as you've applied these principles. We'd love to hear it. Back to the phones to Mississippi. James, go ahead, sir.
Yes, just a simple question. I'm 78 years old. I owe almost $70,000 on my home. I built it in 1960. I'm sorry. Here I am. You can tell by my age what I'm saying. I built it in 2005. I'm daydreaming here. But the question is, I've got enough money in the bank to pay it off. Money that I was saving for my grandkids when I passed away.
Yes.
But what should I take the money and pay the house off?
Yes, sir. If you did that, James, would you still have what I call an emergency fund? Would you have some liquid savings beyond the amount that it would take to pay off the mortgage?
No, sir.
Okay, so that would complete.
Well, you mean, yeah, well, I'm a retired veteran also, okay. So I've got Social Security and VA plus my retirement.
Okay.
I've got the money to, you know, continue to live the lifestyle, but I just, the house, I built it in, like I said, 2005 for my wife, and she passed away, and I just don't need this big of a house and yard.
Yes, sir. Okay, but you're planning to keep it, at least based on what you're thinking today?
Well, if somebody was to come up and offer me the money, I'd take it in a heartbeat.
Well, you don't have to wait for them to offer it. You could sell it, but I guess I'm trying to determine, are you thinking, or at least in your current plans, to go ahead and sell it and try to downsize, or would you just continue to live there? What are your thoughts on selling versus keeping it?
To sell and downsize I've got too much yard and stuff, you know, to keep up at my age, and it just I want a yard I can mow with a push mower.
Okay, very good. Would you expect to do that in the next 12 months, James, or put that house up for sale?
Well, I'm already talking to someone about selling. Okay. You know, I've already had one realtor out here, but.
Okay.
Because of the location and stuff, what I expected to get was not what they're offering. So,
I see. Okay. Well, here's my thought. If you were to tell me, Rob, I'm going to keep this house, and this is at least based on everything I know today, you know, where I'm going to ride out God's calling on my life until he calls me home, I'd say, yeah, let's go pay off that mortgage. You can leave the home either in trust or through your will, or if your state allows, through a transfer on death deed to your heirs, and they would get the proceeds of that sale. But in the meantime, you'd own your home free and clear. You'd reduce your monthly expenses even further, which means you could save more and you wouldn't be paying any interest, so long as, James, after you paid it off, you'd still have at least 6 months worth of expenses in the bank, because I'd love for you to have something there as what I call an emergency fund for you to fall back on when the unexpected comes. I don't want you to deplete all your cash, but if you have that emergency fund and you can pay it off and you're planning on staying in the house, then I'd say go for it and let's leave the house to your heirs. If you're looking to sell it, then I would hang on to the cash and then just pay for the next home, which would likely be less expensive if you're downsizing, potentially. Pay for that house with cash, even if you have to eat into some of what you have in reserves so that you don't have a mortgage. And again, leave that to your heirs. But I also want to make sure in either case that you preserve what I call that emergency fund of 3 to 6 months' expenses and savings. So give me your thoughts on that.
I agree with you 100%. I've always tried to, you know, live my life according to that. I've got my insurance and all the bank accounts and savings accounts all fixed so that,
okay,
you know, that's already, you know, PODs and everything.
Okay.
But
good.
I just, you know, the house is the only thing that I'm concerned about, you know, and I have two children and, yeah. But I have grandchildren and everything. My thoughts were, you know, pay it off and let them fight over it, I guess.
I'd go ahead and spec that out and make sure you communicate how you've decided to leave it in advance so there's no fighting and good communication. Let's just kind of settle this one, though. So just tell me real quick, what do you have in reserves right now in savings?
Probably about $60,000.
All right. What do you owe on the mortgage?
70.
Okay. So you wouldn't quite have enough to pay it off in full, and you would deplete all of your liquid savings. Is that right?
Well, I mean, with my checking account and other savings, you know, I've got enough money to, you know, I'm hiding some in tin cans in the backyard, so I've got some that
okay.
get to.
But you'd barely be able to pay it off, though, even if
right.
you rob all those tin cans, and you'd be out of cash,
yeah.
essentially, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'm not a big fan of that because I don't want you to be down, you know, to zero. So what I would do is probably hang on to your cash. Let's go ahead and work through the process of getting this sold so you can downsize it and get that smaller yard and that smaller house. And then let's just buy that next house with cash as opposed to you trying to pay it off and stretching and finding every dollar and then you being out of cash and having it all tied up in your house. Okay.
I understand. Appreciate
right.
it very much. That's
all right. Hey, James, let me tell you, thank you for your service to our country, sir.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. That was, man, what a delightful gentleman to speak to today. Well, folks, we've got a lot more to come here on Faith and Finance. Aaron, Jose, Betty, you've been very patient. We're coming your way just after the break. More to come on Faith and Finance right after this. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
The core of all of the difficulty that we endure here as human beings, it comes down to this: God's word or man's word. One of the major features that has contributed to this degradation of society in our country, in America in particular, is that we have lost our understanding of the transcendent, surpassing glory of God.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner
weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
When we follow Jesus, the things of this world grow strangely dim. We focus less on ourselves and more on God's kingdom. In Michael Blue's book, Free to Follow, we're reminded to surrender everything to Jesus and follow Him. Free to Follow explores what the Bible says about money and possessions and challenges you to rethink the way you view and use them. Request a copy of Free to Follow with your gift of any amount to faithfi.com/follow.
Hi, I'm Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries and host of the Point of View radio program. You've probably noticed that many young Christians leave the church after they graduate, but they don't have to graduate from God. That's why I want to invite your children and grandchildren to attend the Probe Mind Games Camp in Texas. We prepare them for college and their entry into a world that will challenge their faith. This one-week camp includes lectures, role play, along with some great fun. It will take place June 18 to the 24th. Go to probe.org for more information.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience. And she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Hey, the year's almost done. No, not the calendar year. It's the end of our fiscal year here at FaithFi. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you consider yourself a part of the Faith and Finance family, and you've found some benefit in the teaching and practical advice here on this program. Well, we'd like to invite you to be a supporter of the ministry as we head toward our fiscal year end, June the 30th. Your gifts now, which are tax deductible, are really important to us. Whether you could give $40, $400, or $4,000, and it all will help us to reach our goal. You can do that at faithfi.com. Just click give. That's faithfi.com. Just click give. Thanks in advance. All right, back to the phones we go. Aaron in Ohio, you've been waiting very patiently. Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. West, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you, I owe some back taxes. Probably 2 or 3 years I haven't filed. I'm self-employed, and my earnings has grown over that time period. I don't believe I'll owe a lot, but my question is, could you connect me with somebody from what you guys do to clear that up? And then secondly, what is a safe percentage that I can save each week out of my pay to prevent owing the IRS money at the end of the year?
Yeah, it's a great question, Aaron, and you should absolutely file a return for those years that you haven't. If you don't have the money to pay the taxes, you could get on a payment plan at IRS.gov. You can also apply for an offer in compromise if you have a hardship that the IRS accepts, and that could reduce what you have to pay. I would, in fact, hire a tax professional to help you through this. And it's an expense that really could pay for itself by reducing the amount you'll ultimately have to pay, potentially. So if you give your information to Pat when we're done here, I'll make sure we connect you with somebody who could assist you with this, who has a lot of experience in representing taxpayers before the IRS. And it'll be a gentleman who shares your values and really can help you through this. In terms of the percentage, I would probably start by putting 30% away if you're self-employed. Now, You know, better yet would be to do some tax planning with a professional. So maybe the person who helps you represent you before the IRS could help you just do some calculations and determine what the actual percentage is that you need. But 30% is just a good rule of thumb for you to put aside and then go ahead and pay that in quarterly. And you'll get a better handle on that in the years following. But I think that would be a good starting point. Okay.
A wonderful advice. Thank you, sir.
All right, Aaron, you stay on the line. We'll get your information, and we'll get you connected with somebody who can help you get squared away with the IRS. We appreciate your call today. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We've got some lines open. We'd love to hear from you. To Virginia. Hi, Betty. Go ahead.
Here. I have a question about a life insurance policy.
Okay.
I'm 66, and I get Social Security each month, and I have a part-time job. My part-time job is at a funeral home,
okay.
And I got a really good deal on making pre-arrangements for my own funeral.
Okay.
This is not something I would normally have done, but I've had two deaths within 2 years of close family members.
Yes, ma'am.
So at this point, I have paid for a space at the cemetery. My funeral is prepaid.
Okay.
And I'm still paying on a life insurance policy. I go back and forth between whether I need to keep this, I could cash it in, and I could make a payment on the first mortgage I have against my home. Mm-hmm. I also have a second mortgage that I just got into recently. So I'm undecided whether to maintain this policy, which would provide income for my three children when I do pass away, or cash it in now, put it right on my first mortgage, which would help me financially.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that background, Betty. You know, it doesn't sound to me like you really need that life insurance policy any longer, especially given that you've covered your final expenses through preparation, you know, for your funeral and burial and so forth. So if it were me, I would cash in that policy because nobody's depending upon you for your income, which would be lost if you die. So really that life insurance policy is unnecessary. You could take the proceeds of that and, as you said, pay down the mortgage, which would reduce your expenses, assuming you could eliminate one of those mortgages. And I think obviously that would free up capital that at your death would be available through the sale of the home to pass on to your heirs. But continuing to fund a policy that's going to get more and more expensive, likely as you age, and you know, add expenses to your monthly living expenses, I just don't think makes a lot of sense for you, just kind of given where you're at. The one thing you do need to keep in mind is you may have to pay some income taxes on any portion of the policy that is considered earnings. So not your premiums, but the earnings portion of it. So you'll just need to determine that so that doesn't catch you by surprise. But I like the idea of you cashing this in, reducing your expenses, and trying to live as lean as possible as opposed to continuing to fund this policy.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
It won't pay off either of the two mortgages, but it will pay almost half on the first one.
Okay. And yeah. So it wouldn't reduce your expenses at all then.
Well, I mean, I won't have this premium to pay each month.
Well, that's true. Yeah. So yeah, on the mortgage, I mean, but you're exactly right. Yeah. So you would alleviate the monthly premium or the semi-annual premium on the life insurance, which would obviously go right back into your budget and be available to give you a little bit more cushion. So yeah, I think that's the primary reason to do it. And you're accelerating the payoff of these mortgages. Why would you opt for the first mortgage as opposed to the second in terms of how to use this money?
Well, the first one has a lower balance and it has a higher interest rate.
Oh, okay.
And it was a 30-year loan, which I have been paying on for about 15 years.
Okay.
But last year, I started paying a little extra on the principal.
Yeah.
The second mortgage I just started in February of this year, it has a better interest rate, but I've only made several payments, so it's, I don't know that I'll even live long enough to pay both of these off.
Yeah, yeah. And that's okay. This is where you're going to stay. Then obviously whatever is available at your death would be able then to be passed on. Is it a fixed rate, this new second mortgage?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Both of them are.
Okay, excellent. And if it's if the first mortgage is lower, and you, as you said, it's a lower balance, but also a lower interest rate, or did you say it's high? No, you said the first mortgage is higher than the new second on the interest rate, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I completely concur. I think that's the right approach. You eliminate this expense of the policy premium, and you save some money in interest, and you you know, set yourself up to hopefully pay that off a little quicker. We appreciate your call today, Betty. God bless you. Thanks for being on the program. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jose in Florida, we're coming your way, and then Sarah in Louisiana. And we might have room for one or two more questions at 800-525-7000. Folks, we have a high calling as stewards of God's resources, so let's apply God's wisdom from the Bible to your financial decisions and choices. We'll do that together when we come back from this quick break on Faith and Finance. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Don Hawkins, here to tell you about Encouragement Live, 55 minutes of industrial strength radio encouragement featuring resourceful guests plus practical biblical insights to help you face life's challenges. We'll be taking your phone calls, so plan to join us for Encouragement Live, Saturdays at 7.05 p.m. Central, 8.05 p.m. Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word, and we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
45,000. That's how many times FaithFi referred a listener to a certified Kingdom Advisor last year, and for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking on the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
It's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. By the way, if you've not checked out our website recently, we'd love for you to do that. The wealth of content, articles, podcasts, and videos there to help you be a wise and faithful steward of God's money is incredible. You'll find it all at faithfi.com. You can visit that on your smartphone or on your desktop. Again, faithfi.com. Just click the content button. Also, while you're there, check out the FaithFi app that can help you manage God's money and access all of this great content on the go. Just click the app tabs. Again, it's all at faithfi.com. All right, back to the phones we go to Florida. Hi, Jose. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Rob. God bless you. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
A few years ago, I was lucky to be able to retire a little early, and I moved my family to Florida. So I'm living here, working part-time. My wife works full-time. And now, come January, I'm able to get the retirement income from that last job. Now, I'm a little skeptical on taking an annuity, given the times that we're living. And I know I have an option to take a lump sum instead. And okay. I was wondering if I did that, I know I have to do it that certain way to avoid penalties, and what would I invest it in?
Yeah, it's a good question. Do you have the amounts on either the monthly income stream, the annuitization, versus the lump sum?
Yes.
Okay. What would they give you as a lump sum to start with?
The lump sum would be about $950,000.
Okay.
Versus, I believe they divide that to 20 years, so it would be something like $3,500 to $3,600 a month.
Okay.
Maybe a little
right.
more.
Yeah. And is that just for your life, or is that for your life plus your wife?
That would be for me, and if God forbid something happened to me, she would get half.
Okay. She'd get half of the annuitized monthly payment for the rest of her life?
Correct.
Yeah. You know, just kind of doing some back of the envelope math here, I really much prefer the lump sum option. Because if that was invested conservatively, number one, you'd have access to the full amount if you all needed it. Let's say one of you needed to go into long-term care and that was going to run you, you know, $100,000 plus a year, or you had something come out of left field and you needed to access the money, you'd be able to do that. You know, we would typically use a 4% withdrawal rate on that so you could maintain principal balance and pull that 4% a year as income. That, you know, at 4% on 960 or 950,000, that's north of 3,000 a month, 3,100 a month. And that's, you know, maintaining the 950. So even, you know, over the long term, if it's invested properly, you should preserve that balance, if not grow it a little bit, and be able to draw that essentially nearly the same income that they're proposing, that at your death gets cut in half. And, you know, you and I as men are going to, on the average, predecease our wives. And so now she'd be looking at, you know, $1,600-$1,700 a month versus having, being able to continue this income stream of $3,000 a month or more. And again, still having access to the full principal. Does that make sense?
I agree with you 100%, and that's why I needed to discuss it with you. And then again, what would I invest it in?
This is a significant sum of money. So what I would be doing is hiring an investment advisor who you interview and you feel like is a good fit and you have a good rapport, and you know they understand what God's doing with you and your wife in this next season of life and your risk tolerance and your values, and then they can build a portfolio that would probably be, you know, somewhere around 30%, maybe 40% in stocks, maybe 60 to 70% in bonds, maybe with some income generation. It could even be values aligned using faith-based investments, if that was a conviction of yours. But they build and manage that portfolio. And so what I would do is head to our website and find some certified Kingdom advisors in your area. I'd interview two or three and find the one that's the best fit. When this comes to you, I would roll it, or they will instruct you to roll it to an IRA. So it's not a taxable event, keeps it in a tax deferred environment. And then you all could set up as an income stream to have this paid out to you, you know, in whatever monthly amount you need. And then you could even do some giving out of it through a qualified charitable distribution as you wanted to. So the way you'd find some advisors to interview in your area is just head to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. And then just click find a CKA and you can do a zip code search.
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Rob. I appreciate the advice.
Absolutely, Jose. You've worked hard, man, so enjoy it. This is going to be hopefully an exciting season for you guys as the Lord continues to use you in some new ways. We appreciate you being on the program. To Louisiana. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, I think, like I told the lady, my question is, my husband and I have a home, and it's paid off. We don't have any debt. We have a few dollars in the bank savings, but he's concerned that if we go with the Lord tomorrow, my daughter is going to have a hard time collecting the house if we don't have a will, or if we don't give her a power of attorney, or I'm not sure exactly what's the name of it. So I was wondering, what is your best advice for a situation like that? We only have about, I think, about $20,000. He's retired Social Security and from the Navy. I'm still part-time working, not too much, but that's my question.
Okay, very good. Do you all have a will currently, Sarah?
No, sir, we haven't. We keep saying we're going to the base to do a will, and we keep postponing. I guess we're scared to do a will.
Well, I that's really an important next step for you all. Louisiana okay. does not recognize what's called a transfer on death deed, so you wouldn't be able to add that to the house, but your will would basically determine or allow you to acknowledge how you and your husband want your assets to be transferred through the probate court at your death. You don't want them making that decision for you. You want to be able to instruct the probate court through your will and according to your wishes how your assets, including your home, are distributed at your death. Some people are fearful about creating a will because they think, well, as soon as I create the will, I'm going to die. No, God's in control of that, right? And we need to be wise stewards of our resources. And this is the last stewardship decision you will make. And so you need to see this as a part of being a faithful steward of what God has entrusted to you. So I would, without delay, I would make an appointment with an attorney who can help you put that will in place. And that will ensure and give you and your husband peace of mind that you've done the planning necessary to have your assets, including your home, transferred appropriately at your death.
Okay. One more question then. If she's married, is there any stipulation we can put in the will that the money is only for her, or by law she has to share with her husband?
You might want to put it into a trust in order to accomplish your wishes on that, as opposed to a will. And you could talk to the attorney about that. It'd be a little bit more expensive, Sarah, but you would retitle the house in the name of the revocable trust. And your daughter could be a beneficiary of the trust, and there could be certain conditions and stipulations as to how the proceeds of the trust, including this home that would be sold at your death, are distributed. So it would give you a little bit more control, but you'd want to talk to the attorney about that.
Okay. And last question, I'll let you go. Is it true that if you are old and you got to go to a nursing home, can they take your home away from you to pay for the nursing home?
So you're talking about, if you spend down all of your assets in a nursing home?
Yes.
Yeah. There are certain protections. Nursing homes cannot take a person's home or require them to sell it to pay for care. However, if you're using Medicaid to cover nursing costs, you are at the risk of your home being seized by the government upon your death to reimburse expenses, but they can't force you to sell your home to pay for care.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. You've been very, very helpful. I hope my husband was listening.
Well, have him call us if he has some questions. Thanks for being on the program, Sarah. We appreciate it. To West Virginia. Hi, Joyce. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. I got a letter from the Department of Labor telling me that the Social Security made a mistake of $77,100-something in 2010, and that it was their mistake, and that they were going to make a decision, and they made a decision that I should pay it back. But it was not my mistake. It was their mistake.
Yeah.
So they have decided that I should pay it back. Also, that I should pay $4,400 interest on top of it.
Yeah.
So they took $700 first, which was the mistake out of my check. And then on top of that, now they're taking $550. The Department of Labor is taking it. $550 out of my check a month.
Yeah. Well, here's what I would do. I mean, obviously, this is a significant sum of money, and so it's worth you spending some time and even money to try to get this overturned. There's two steps here. Number one is to file what's called a reconsideration appeal that has to be done within 65 days of the date on the notice of payment. And so you want to go ahead and file that reconsideration appeal. And then I would find a Social Security disability attorney, someone who specializes in these types of things, to help you. We'll certainly be praying for you, Joyce. I know this can be frustrating, and you really need some godly help and counsel to help you navigate it. Thanks for being on the program today. That's going to do it for us today, folks. Thanks to my team, Devin Patrick, Pat Montague, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll be here, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.